Did you know you can save up to 70% on the best brands just by shopping at FromRebel.com? We're talking about strollers, car seats, high chairs, espresso machines, cookware, everything you need for way less. Here's how it works. Every single day, Rebel drops thousands of new products on the site for up to 70% off. It is a constant stream of endless deals from top brands like Upa Baby, Nuna, Baby Bjorn, Breville, Nespresso, KitchenAid, Le Creuset, and more. But you have to act fast because every deal is one of a kind. So if you see something you love, make sure you add to cart fast. So stop paying full price when you don't have to. Whether it's baby gear, kitchen upgrades, or a treasure for your home you didn't know you needed, Rebel has it for way less, up to 70% less. Shop from Rebel.com and save big.
If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world. Whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025 and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search President David and Charles and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Melissa Zexter is a Brooklyn-based artist who sews directly onto her own photography, exploring the concepts of identity, memory, and technology. This is the first part of the Needle Exchange with Melissa and I, and it's been great to chat with her. I've known of Melissa's work. We worked out for well over a decade, and so it's fantastic to actually get to talk to her about her art. I've seen many people over the years who stitch on paper, who stitch on photographs. Melissa's work has a unique slant in that she takes the photographs herself, and her skill and experience in photography helps shape the narrative of those photographs before she then applies a new layer over the top of them with her needlework to create something really quite special. And she's been doing this medium for years. You know, as long as I've known her, she's been producing these works. And they explore family, they explore identity. They're really interesting to look at. There's something quite unique about the way she delivers her work. So certainly, if you've not seen her work, go check out the links in the show notes and make sure that you do that. This is the first part of our chat, like I say, so we really talk around the houses. We get to know how she does her work, how she came to be the artist that she is, and we talk in many ways just about that realm of medium. Obviously, we'll be back next week with the second part of our conversation, but I think you'll enjoy Melissa. She knows what she's talking about, and it was really lovely to have that chat with her. So, yeah, thanks for being here. Obviously, thanks for listening to Needle Exchange. If you like this show, please do share it with somebody else who you think will enjoy it. And I'll be back next week with the second part of our chat. So in the meantime, enjoy the show. I was looking back. I decided to have a look back and see when the first time I wrote about you on the website. And it was in 2011. That's like 13 years ago.
Yeah, I know. I remember that. And I don't know how. I don't remember if you found me or if I got in touch with you. I don't remember.
Yeah, me either. I know it was a funny time because that, to me, in some ways, I look back and I think that was like prime time for me in some ways. That makes me sound like I've achieved nothing since. But like, because it was like Flickr was a thing, Facebook wasn't too much of a bummer. Instagram was emerging. There was just this time when it was a real sweet spot because it was quite easy to find people. I was really excited because I was still like finding new artists and stuff. And your work, like, I was just super excited about it at the time. I can remember always just being a thrill. And now I look back and it's like, it was 13 years ago.
Yeah, I know. Time flies, right?
How have you been?
I've been well, and I've been, you know, consistently making work and building on my themes of portraiture, which I do mostly portraiture. And yeah, I've been embroidering on photos since 1999 now.
Really? Wow. Yeah. So even I was quite late to the party then by that status.
I know. And at that time, I had not seen anyone who was doing embroidery on photographs. And I have been doing photography for a long time before that.
Right.
So I studied photography in college and graduate school. And then right after that, I started kind of branching off from doing more like documentary and portrait photographer into wanting to create like one-of-a-kind photographs. And initially, I wasn't using embroidery. I had never sewn before. I'd never thought of it even. And I was doing like painting on photos and kind of more sculptural pieces with photography. And it was quite by accident that I came across sewing, which I immediately loved. But it was really, it was quite by accident, if you'd like to hear.
Yeah, no, I want the whole story. I want the whole shebang. You were 8 years old. No, go on, go for it.
I was 8 years old. So one summer I went to this artist residency program where, you know, you're invited to go to a residency and just focus on your work for a month. And they just take care of you and you just do your work. And I was there, and I brought some photographs with me. I was doing these kind of sculptural pieces, and I ran out of photographs. And I was up in the mountains in the woods, and I had no way to print or access to photography. And there was another artist there who was making paper, and she said, oh, would you like me to teach you how to make paper? I had never made paper before. I was like, yeah, that sounds great. So I made paper, and I went to the town. I was just buying something at the hardware store, and I noticed that there was a thread section at the hardware store. And I just bought some thread. And I got back, and with my paper, I started sewing these drawings onto paper. It was quite by accident. And I immediately loved sewing. And I thought, I'm going to start sewing on my photographs. It was just an accident. If I hadn't run out of the photographs, I don't know, or if I hadn't gone into that hardware store, I don't know where my work would be. I mean, it might have happened eventually, but, you know, things happen by accident and they lead you into good directions sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the beauty, isn't it? You look back and you just think there was some fate involved there somehow.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I immediately loved it. And then I was thinking recently, my mother did a lot of textile arts and sewing, making our clothes and knitting and crocheting our whole life. And I never really did it. I guess you just don't always do the same thing that your mother does. But I remember being in college and I had to decide what was my major going to be because I went to an art school and I loved photography. So I remember my father picking me up and I said, I'm going to study photography. And he said, I don't know if that's the best idea. Maybe you should study textile art. And I was like, textile art? Why would I do that? So it's just funny how things kind of come full circle. And maybe I should have listened to my father. I don't know.
It's funny that he kind of said that, isn't it? So
it was
so
totally out of nowhere. I was like, why would you say that? Like, I have, you know, I've never done.
And was your mum quite nonchalant about it? Like, she didn't try and make you do it. She just kind of did it and it was there.
With her
needlework and stuff. Was it more like functional?
When I was a kid, she tried to show me how to knit, and I knit like little things for my dolls, and they all came out crooked, and it just wasn't my thing. And I tried to make a scarf, and it was all crooked. Everything I made was always crooked, and I guess it's kind of like that with my work too. But yeah, so I guess I didn't enjoy it at the time, but as I got older, I don't know, maybe I became more patient and I really gravitated towards it. And I love the contrast between, you know, photography, which is such a more technologically immediate medium in some ways, and then embroidery and sewing, which, as we know, is very time consuming and slow and kind of a meditative process. So I like the combination of the two. And I like that, you know, in this age where photographs are so mass reproducible, that I was able to make just one of a kind photographs. That was kind of my goal. You know, like, I'm tired of looking at so many images and they kind of stop meaning anything. And the idea of like sitting with one photograph and just really studying it and making one unique thing that can't be reproduced was kind of my goal.
It's kind of funny. It reminds me, I went to Florence to the Uffizi Museum or Uffizi Gallery with my wife. And there's a lot of like Venus. There's a lot of Venus. And after a while, you're sort of Venused out. Do you know what I mean? Because you're just like, okay, another Venus. Or like if you see... It was making me think when you go to IKEA and you see like the black and white photo of the guy sitting on a beam of scaffolding in the 1920s at the top of the tower. And you're like, wow.
We all know that image.
Yeah,
right?
yeah, isn't it? But because there's so many of them, it kind of just takes the sting out of it, doesn't it? It takes the wow away.
Yeah. Well, when I first moved to New York right after college, my first job literally was 1 week after I graduated from college. My first job was I became a photography printer in the darkroom. At the time, there was not really digital photography. That's how long ago it was. My first job was as a darkroom printer at the Associated Press.
Wow.
And they did, you know, it's like a busy agency 24 hours a day where they're supplying images to news outlets all over the world, all over the country. And so I was having to print really fast. And, you know, right away I was like, so much photography. And I want to do something different than this. I don't want to just make something that floats by and you look over in a newspaper once and then you throw the newspaper out, you know?
Yeah.
So and it was right then that I decided I want to do something unique. And it wasn't sewing. It was more like painting on photos at first.
And I was printing them on. Yeah. Did you do some of that then?
I changed right away because initially my goal was like, oh, I want to work for newspapers. I want to do like documentary photography or photojournalism. And as soon as I got that job where I was mass printing images, I said, I went home and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do something that's one of a kind. So I started printing photographs. I set up a darkroom in my home. I printed really large scale photographs on canvas and I started painting and kind of adding materials to them. So that was before I started sewing. I was trying to figure out ways to really manipulate the photograph and make it one of a kind and make it a little more sculptural too.
So there's an element of like the design of the shot in the first place that then leads itself to you being able to manipulate it further.
Yeah. And I was always interested at that time. I was always interested in portraits and kind of very straightforward portraits and then, you know, altering them with paint. And then I started like printing them on wood and making these huge things. And eventually I just kind of ran out of space. Sometimes you have to work with your space. And I was like, I'm going to make things that I can fit into a portfolio that I can actually, you know, it became kind of more practical.
Yeah. I always wondered that about Henry Moore in the early days as his works got bigger and bigger. Do you think he was ever like, right, I'm really going to have to go one way or the other here? Like,
right. Well, I guess if you get a certain level of, you know, recognition and fame and your work is selling consistently for large amounts of money and you have access to large studio spaces or foundries or whatever it is, then you don't have to think about those issues. But if you're living in New York and you have a small studio or a small apartment you're working in, you kind of have to sometimes change your work a little bit
so that it can
fit with, you know, for practical reasons, fit into your space.
And like when you started, so how old were you when you started making that decision? What was that? Because you just come out of college, you say.
I was 21.
Right. And so a lot of your...
It's been a long time.
That's not where I'm going with this line of inquiry, just to say that. But so a lot of your peers would have been graduating at the same time as you. Did any of them take similar paths or were you a bit of an outlier at that point?
No, I was kind of my individual choice. I knew other people I had studied photography with, but people kind of went in all different directions. A lot of them didn't even continue with photography, or they went into like computer science or computer arts. And I didn't really know anyone who was doing the kind of photography I was doing. I mean, I'm sure there's people out there who, you know, do painting and things on photographs. And then I went to graduate school a year later, and then people were kind of doing more mixed media things with photography.
But even then, you went and did embroidery, which presumably had people spitting drinks out when you told them or something.
Yeah. Well, that when I did embroidery, that was a few years later. And honestly, I had never, at that time, I had never seen anyone do embroidery. And I thought, no one's going to do this. This is too crazy. This is like, this is too time consuming. And, you know, and then now it's so different. I do see a lot of people who are embroidering on photographs. But a lot of what I see is people kind of using appropriated images or postcards or kind of.
At the UPS store, we know being a small business owner means holiday time is still go time. Still get those orders shipped time and still re-up on stamps and supplies time. That's why this upcoming holiday, while others close up shop, we'll be open and happy to help you keep being unstoppable. Come into your local store today. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable.
Images that look kind of like stock photography. But not everyone, obviously. But it's really important to me that I use my own images. I really consider myself a photographer. And early on when, you know, I'd be in exhibitions with, you know, embroidered photographs, or if someone came to interview me for a publication and they'd ask me how I feel about being a textile artist, I thought, I'm not a textile artist, you know, but now I think I guess I identify that way in a bit, you know, because I've been sewing and doing this on photographs for so long. I guess I consider myself a textile artist of sorts, although I still consider myself a photographer.
It's an interesting point that you make there, actually, about, because a lot of the time when you see people who are stitching on photographs, there is that thing of, I found these photographs, you know, and weaving narratives. It makes me think of, I mean, Maurizio Anzeri was the one who always seemed to get the notoriety with his like geometric designs coming out of people's eyes and all those kind of things.
Right.
So it's interesting that your process is much more deliberate than that in the first place.
Yeah. And I do like his work. The photography is really important to me. And most of the people who are in my photographs are people that I know. And so it has this added importance to me. It's almost creating sort of a memento or a memory and kind of adjusting that memory through the use of thread. But I find that when I have a connection to the photograph in the first place, I'm able to kind of react to it and have much more feeling to it than if I use a photograph that's not my own, or if there's subject matter in the photograph that I don't feel so strongly about.
So can you talk like through the process? Is it possible to do that? I know, for instance, or I believe, for instance, you have quite a few family members in your photos.
Yes, I have a lot of my photographs, but not all, include my daughters. I have two daughters who are now in their 20s. But I also use a lot of friends in my photographs. And there are some photographs of people that I just met, but they have a certain look that I think would go well with my sewing, my techniques. So I've kind of become friends with people through asking them, would you like to model and be part of this process? So a lot of my work, I would say 75% of the photos are taken with film, and I use a medium format film camera. And then I process the film and I print the photographs myself. And most of the photographs are about 20 by 24 inches. So they're not tiny. And there are some smaller ones and there are some bigger ones, but that's kind of my average size. But yeah, the most of the people in the photographs are people that I know, and there's a lot of photographs of women, although there are some of men too.
And is it that the model dictates the picture, or does you get an idea in your head and then you put the components together to execute that idea?
Usually when I take the photographs, I don't really have a specific idea of how I'm going to, you know, alter them with the sewing, what kind of patterns I might use, or even what colors I'll use. But once I print the photograph, I'm obviously printing, I take a lot of photographs and I'm printing the ones that I think will work with embroidery. Now, they don't always work, but I'm hoping that they will. And then once I see the photograph, then I kind of come up with ideas. And some of it is very abstract sewing, and others are very planned out with patterning that I plan out. And sometimes I start sewing on the photos and it doesn't work at all. And I kind of will put it aside and come back to it. And sometimes it will just come out completely different than what I had planned. That often happens, especially now I find myself working where I'm kind of juggling a few pieces at the same time. And sometimes I just get stuck on something and I'll put it away. I put something away for a year and then I came back to it and I disassembled the whole thing and made it into something completely different. And that seems to be happening a lot these days for me. And it didn't used to. I used to work in a different way where I'd start one piece and just work through it before I went on to the next one.
So there's a bit more surrender maybe this time. You're not fighting it.
It doesn't. I'm using different kinds of photos at the same time. So I'll be doing some portraits, but I'm also doing, I'm also using some photographs of like houses or landscapes. So in the past, I did a series like I would initially my photographs were mostly nudes. Right. So there were a lot of figures and I would print out, you know, like 10 of these photographs from a couple of different photo sessions. And then I would work through those for, you know, a year or something, you know. But now I will print a couple of photographs, start working on those. And then if that doesn't work, I'll go back and do another, you know. I'm just working differently these days. And I've been doing it for like 25 years. So, of course, hopefully things change in that amount of time.
So when you say that you start stitching on something and it doesn't work, like what is that? What is not working at that point?
You know, a lot of it is very intuitive. And for instance, I guess it might be hard to explain because you're not seeing the piece, but recently I've been going to New Orleans because my daughter is living down there. And I've been just loving the architecture there and the trees that are very mossy. And I've been, you know, there's kind of this gothic feeling and this darkness to a lot of the subject matter that I've been printing. And I really like that. And so I have this photograph of this house surrounded by trees, and I printed a few different versions of the same photograph, and I decided that I was going to cut up one of the photos and kind of sew it into the other. So it created even an extra layer. So it became, I don't really use the word collage, but definitely layered with photos and then sewing on top. So I had this idea, but as I worked on it, it just wasn't working. It just wasn't looking right. I couldn't, it was hard to sew through multiple layers of this thick paper. So I could do some small stitches, but I couldn't do the kind of intricate stitchery that I wanted to do. So I kind of just gave up on it, and I started drawing on it with pen. So I started making all these small marks on it throughout the whole photos that kind of look like they could be stitches because they're so small, but it just wasn't working. So I put it away. I came back to it a year later. I took off the pieces that had been, you know, layered on top, and I just sewed directly into the photo. But then I had the ink on it and I had these old layers of thread, and, you know, it just kind of built up into something different. And in the end, it really worked out, I think. But the way it was looking, you know, because of the layers, it was just harder. If I had, you know, used a machine, perhaps you could sew through that. But when, you know, I don't often use machines because it's too uniform for me.
Right.
I like the irregularity that you get through hand stitching.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. And then I had another photograph of a young woman holding a doll. And I love the photograph. She's very photogenic. She had this big bow in her hair. And same thing. I was sewing on it. I just couldn't get it. I did some layers of like ink over it. Nothing was working. So I put it away. I came back to it. And I just found this old color photograph that was of willow trees. And I started cutting it up into shapes and sewed it all over the doll. Now you can't even see the doll anymore. And it's just, you know, it's been totally altered. So those two examples I can think of how it started out as something and my idea just didn't work out at all. So but I went back to it and then changed it.
Because as you said a minute ago, it's interesting that you say sometimes you stitch deliberate patterns on the top of things, but it does feel like a lot of the time it's just quite free form output that you're stitching on top of the photograph in the first place.
Yeah. Some of it is free form. Some of it is planned out because it has to be, because if I'm doing a very repetitive pattern, that type of thing I feel needs to be planned out. But one thing that I really enjoy is, and you've probably heard this from other embroidery artists, is how the back of the images look. So what I do sometimes is I'll be sewing, you know, my pattern on the front, but I'll flip it over and start working. So I'm not even looking at the image and I'm sewing, you know, holding the back towards me, sewing from the front, but not seeing the front and all the loose stuff, all the layered and textured stuff that then comes through on the front of the image. So I don't know how that's going to look, but I like that element of surprise. I like the contrast between the, you know, the kind of planned patterning with very loose and more abstract textured thread.
That's making me smile, right? Because when I saw your work, like one of the first thoughts I always had was, this must be what it's like to be psychic. Because I always thought that with your work, it's like there's this whole layer of conversation that for most people is unseen. But, you know, if you're psychic, then suddenly you can see all these things behind it. And then I like the fact that you turn the picture over and I'm not psychic. So obviously I don't know what I'm talking about. But
well, I am psychic.
Are you?
Kind of.
Get out of Dodge. But so what I'm trying to say, you know, if you turn it over, then what you're doing is you're allowing the messages that are behind the scenes to dictate what's coming out the front, which to me feels like that would be what would be like if you were clairvoyant or clairaudient, one might say.
Yeah, well, the one challenge that I find in my work is like, how do you present this work where the back looks really interesting, but you like the front too, and sometimes you can't decide, you know? So I've been in a couple exhibitions where I've framed it where you could see both sides, where you know, you put it in glass, but you could see both sides. So that sometimes is a solution, but it's hard to sometimes install things like that, you know? So I don't often do it, but I like that idea of being able to see the front and the back.
Yeah. Well, Diane Mayer, then, who obviously stitches on photography, quite a different process, as in she's just kind of cross-stitching and there's a there's a pattern and a deliberacy to that. But she does frame both sides in glass so you can see the back. And she's also, she leaves really long dangling threads. She doesn't really seem to tie much off. And I think there's a certain fearlessness. I could feel like you could, old people like falling over in their tracks or fainting when they see the back of it. But I
like that.
Yeah, and I exhibited her work at one point. And again, the thing is you want, it's almost like you want to put them on plinths so that people can walk around either side, but that's not always practical. But I mean, it's not impossible.
Yeah. But no, I've done that a few times and it's really, I really like it because then, you know, if someone comes to your studio, they can obviously look at the front and back. But if you have your work hanging on the wall in a gallery, it's not often that you can see the back unless you do frame it that way.
Yeah, and then who was I talking to? I think it was Julie Heaton. I interviewed her a while ago, and she'd done a piece, I hope it's her, where she'd kind of cut the image in half, and then she'd stitched the front face of one half, and then turned it over and stitched the back face of the other half.
Right.
But still had it from the front, if that makes sense. So half of it was the front stitch, and half of it was the reverse of the stitch, still on the front.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah, so I think that's kind of, although I'm not cutting an image in half, sometimes that's what I'm aiming to do when I'm flipping the image over and sewing, you know, to get that texture that comes forth on the front of the image so you can kind of see both.
Hmm. Now, I'm really itching to dive into the fact that you just said you were psychic, but I am going to save that for a minute. But, I mean, is that do you think, where this conversation with the thread comes from? Is that part of what you're trying to do, is put, like, two different, like, realms on the same space?
I would say not always, but sometimes there's a lot of my pieces where, like I said, there's like very deliberate patterning, and then over it will come this very loose, you know, loose thread and added layer of color. So, yeah, that's intentional.
Because some people, you know, like they obfuscate things, like they'll use the stitching to hide certain elements. Or with Diane's work, I think she makes certain parts disappear and presents what would be where that disappearance was. Whereas yours never felt like that. Yours was always just like this almost like layer of gauze or layer of lace over the top, like some kind of net curtain effect. So you can still clearly see what's going on behind.
Yeah.
But then there's this other thing in front as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a fine line, I think, sometimes between like creating these webs, I guess I could call it a web over a photograph, versus like really burying the photograph. You don't want to like destroy your photograph so it's not visible at all. So you kind of have to stop at some point so that the image can still breathe through the thread. Mm. But you want the thread to, you know, to integrate in a certain way with the photograph without totally burying or destroying it.
Mm. And then...
¿Buscas las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's? ¡Estás justo a tiempo! Ahorra hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. ¿Estás pensando ya en poner luces navideñas? Aprovecha ahorros de hasta 50% en escaleras selectas. Precios de Black Friday sin las filas de Black Friday. Lowe's. Nosotros ayudamos. Tú ahorras. Válido hasta el 11-19. Selección varía por tienda. Solo en tiendas selectas hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en Lowe's.com.
You don't use a lot of like really rich colors, isn't it? Your threads are very light. Are they quite modest? Or am I completely off the point there?
No, I think it ranges a lot. I've been using a lot of greens and blues this past year. It wasn't like I planned it. Like, I'm going to do everything green and blue. But in looking at my photographs, there's a lot of... there's some imagery of water in my photographs that's been going on through... all the time I've been photographing. I really love the water, so maybe I'm influenced by that. But I think it's just sometimes the mood of the photograph. I've also used like a lot of reds and oranges, but I feel like lately it's my blue period.
is that like an unconscious thing, I suppose, or do you just...
Yeah, again, I think a lot of it is just instinctual, the way that I'm working. You know, I've also been, one thing that I've been doing lately is, it's kind of a side project. They're smaller images that I can fit into a typewriter, because I've been kind of collaborating with different writers and musicians, where they provide me with some words, and I've been integrating the words and embroidery onto photographs. And a lot of the thread is white.
Hmm.
So I haven't really... you know, sewn so much with white, but I like this idea of like using black and white photos. There's really not much color besides the black of the text from the typewriter and the white textured threads.
Mm.
So it's a little bit different. I mean, I don't know exactly how this is all going to turn out, but they're kind of smaller images that I can fit into typewriters, which isn't usually the scale that I work.
I've seen a couple of those pieces on your Instagram, and it's almost like there's a real like modern, you know, there's a bit of like a punk aesthetic, because it's almost like the way the words are like cut out and pasted and stuff. But it feels like it lends itself to almost some kind of poetry, or, you know, there's a form of storytelling that's evolving there, isn't there? Because you've got the image and you've got the words and you've got the interplay between the two.
Yeah. I mean, I really love music. I think I love music as much as I love art and photography.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm trying to kind of figure out. And sometimes I get angry at myself. I'm like, why can't I just figure this out? But I guess that's one of the the joys or the challenges of making art is that you have to work through processes to figure these things out. So, but I'm trying to figure out how to kind of integrate text more with my images, whether it's my own writing or other people's writing or lyrics, and using the embroidery with it too. So there's a few different things going on.
I'm kind of surprised you haven't done like an album cover somewhere down there.
Oh, right? I would love to do album covers.
Well, for all the bands listening.
That's actually one of my goals. And I've had a few people ask me to do album covers. And then, you know, things just haven't panned out. But that's one of my big goals. So if there's anyone out there listening.
Yeah. All of those textile artists loving rock stars.
I'm available for commission for album covers.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it? Yeah. I also, I don't know how to bring this subject up, but there's something about you cross-stitching on Jell-O packets.
Oh, yeah.
Is that just like a guilty pleasure or something?
Yeah, no, I think I've become... I don't know if other textile artists are like this. I've become so addicted to sewing. I can't stop. Mm-hmm. So in my downtime, you know, I collect these different, you know, packages like Jell-O packets or like tea pack, you know, cardboard, things that are made of the lightweight cardboard. And then I'll just sit on my porch and just sew cross stitch on them. And I like it. It's just kind of... It's just a fun thing to do, you know?
Say, does anybody walk past you and you're like, that's that cross-stitching on jelly lady again?
Oh, yeah, probably. Walking. There's that crazy jello lady.
I love that. So with like your body of work and the pieces that you do, are there any like themes in your head or are you literally just making one up after the other kind of because, you know, you feel like taking some photos, you feel like making the stitches? Like, how much is there a deliberacy to, like, the broad picture you're painting?
This might be repetitive to what I already said, but I'm really interested in the history of photography and I'm really interested in portraiture and how, you know, how people... pose for cameras, how you capture people through portraiture. I'm trying to kind of get into the head of these people that I photograph and how do I translate like what my feelings are towards people or how I want to kind of memorialize them or, you know, make a memory of them with the photographs. And, you know, when I was a kid growing up, this kind of goes back. This is pre-digital photography. So there was one camera in our house and it was my mother's camera. And I just, ever since I was so little, I loved photography. I made our family albums. My mother didn't do it. She took a few photos, but I would put all the albums together. It was always really important to me to kind of capture these memories of our family. And then, you know, I was lucky that my parents bought me this camera when I was 8 years old. So I would just take all the, then I became the family photographer. My mother didn't do it. I'd photograph, you know, people in my neighborhood and my brothers and my parents. And I swear my photographs now look just like the photographs I took when I was 8 years old. You know, in terms of the formal quality of them, like kind of straightforward portraits. And so I think part of my photography is not just like capturing a moment, but they kind of serve as images of, you know, of a specific time period, of a specific person that serves as like a memory of that person. Kind of, you know, when people would put little images in lockets to hold them close to them. That's kind of how I feel about my photographs. You know, they're very personal and have great importance to me. And, you know, I love that idea of like something in a locket or a piece of hair in a locket, you know, to really be close to the people that you love.
Because you said earlier, a lot of people mistake your photographs for being found ones or vintage ones, but you're just deliberately designing them to look nostalgic.
No, I don't think they look nostalgic. I think people might think that because they're black. A lot of my photographs
are... Okay, yeah.
And it's not like I'm dressing people in old clothes.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But I do like lacy things, but I don't dress them like, you know, people from the 1800s or anything. But I think a lot of people maybe in this day and age aren't as used to seeing black and white photographs as they are with color photographs. So maybe that's why they think, oh, these must be, you know, vintage photographs. Mm. Yeah. Or photos. I've seen other artists who collect, you know, like snapshots or vintage photographs from, you know, flea markets or junk shops and embroider on those. But that's not really what I do.
Mm. Yeah, it's reminded me. So I had this little gap not that long ago when I didn't have a dog. We had a dog for like 9 years. Then he died. And 4 months later, we got a puppy. So I had this little gap. And in that gap, I found some creativity. It was quite interesting. But and what I was doing is I've got a Game Boy camera emulator on my phone. It's like a Game Boy emulator, but basically you can take photographs and it's as though you've taken them with a Game Boy camera. So it's like super basic. Uh-huh. But there was something in that that intrigued me about that format of basic photography. And then it reminded me of just that thing of like when you've got a camera and you've got 32 pictures on the film or whatever it was. Yeah. A, it puts an importance on you taking the photos because you can't be like wasteful about it. But also there's just something then about the things that people chose to take photos of. And the first picture I took when I was experimenting was of some knives and spoons in the bottom of a sink. But in my head, I was like, there's something about that. There's something about like just photographs of the normal that quite interests me. So every now and again, if we go to somewhere, like I went to London not that long ago, and one of the things, like I've still got it on my phone. So I took some like Game Boy photos, but of like some rubbish in a doorway. And I was like, there's something in that. And I don't know what it is. But I think that because it's been put into like this really retro medium as well, it's almost like a sort of time travel device or something.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah. It's funny that you say that about the, you know, having 32 pictures on a roll of film or whatever, because I also teach photography to younger people. Mm. And if I give them an assignment with a digital camera, you know, if I say, let's walk around New York for an hour with a digital camera, they will come back with about 400 photos.
Right.
If they give them a film camera with a roll of 36 pictures on it, they cannot finish the roll.
Yeah.
In that same amount of time. I think when you're using film, it's a very different medium because you're not seeing your images right away. Mm-hmm. You have to really focus. And I find that I look at things in a different way because I don't have endless amounts of, you know, pictures to take like you do with a digital camera. So I think it's just the way you capture images is a little bit different.
Yeah, there's something in your head, isn't there? There's almost like this directorship or something pops into your brain that says you can't just hit and hope, can you? You've got to like, there's got to be some intrinsic value in what you're doing.
Yeah. And I mean, you could have, you know, if you had 10 rolls of film, you could shoot 360 pictures and that's fine. But it's just interesting to me that, you know, people find it really hard to shoot a roll of film, but with the same amount of time with a digital camera, they can shoot 400 pictures.
Mm, yeah. And then, I mean, as part of that process, then do they go through the production of it? You know, they get to see their prints a few days later or whatever. Is that all part of it?
Yeah. They still have if you had the same assignment, they would still have to edit and, you know, select certain photos, but they just wouldn't have as much content to choose from.
Mm, yeah. Right. My 7-year-old, she's about to do a photography like after school club for her half term at school. And I'm very interested to see what happens because I'm hoping that like, even if they teach like the rule of thirds or I don't know. Right. I don't know what the photography basics are. But I'm worried that it might just be they'll just teach him, I don't know, any old crap, take a picture on an iPad, you know. Whereas my 5-year-old, like, we've got a couple of little digital cameras, not phones or whatever, but the little digital cameras. And I'm like, she's got a bit of a knack. She's kind of interested in the tech. I kind of want to give it to her now and let her have free reign in the hope that by the 10 years down the road, she's Melissa Zexter.
Yeah, right. I mean, photography is so different now just because everyone has a camera, you know.
Hmm. But then you must still, well, you've just got this old school grounding in it, haven't you? So you obviously appreciate it differently.
Yeah. I mean, I learned photography in a very different way. And maybe that influences the way that I take pictures too. And also one thing that I didn't mention is, and you might already know this about me, is that I grew up in a house that was 400 years old.
Oldest house in America, so it was.
Actually. And my parents were antique dealers, so I was always surrounded by, I like grew up in a museum, basically.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I just found it surrounded by paintings. Like, and I think about my photographs, how they look exactly like the paintings that I was, you know, I grew up with, you know, 18th, 17th century paintings in my house with portraits. And I think, you know, what you're surrounded by sometimes can really influence the way that you look at things, the way that you make things if you're an artist. It's just kind of sucked into my system, being surrounded by, you know, antiques and old paintings and beautiful textiles. You know, it's all, it's kind of what I became.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, it's funny, like you say, it's just, there's layers in there, like dipping a candle, isn't there? There's layers of you that are just that. But do you ever feel the urge to like hold a flash up in your other hand when you're taking a photo? Like the, those old ones like they used to do.
Like flash powder thrown on the ground.
That could be right, right in your wheelhouse. No, that's amazing. I mean, are there any like when you're teaching photography, is there like photography 101 principles? What are the sort of things that you try and teach good practice?
I'm where I teach, we still have a dark room. So we do dark room and we do digital, but I usually start with dark room work. And I just teach them, you know, to start, you got to learn how to use your camera. You got to understand all the functions on your camera. So all that, you know, very technical stuff you need to kind of get down before you move on and photograph whatever it is that's personal to you and what you, you know, how, what you want to do. So we do some technical exercises and then we kind of move into more personal subject matter.
I did a course once. I did a day course where someone taught me ISOs and apertures and all of that. And I think for on that day, I had like a moment of clarity, you know, where I was like, oh, I understand this. And subsequently, that's all fogged back over again now.
So yeah, of course.
You just switch to the auto button.
Yeah, if you understand how to use your camera or whatever tool it is that you're using, you can make decisions then on how you want your photographs to look or how you want your, you know, whatever. Like if you're a painter and you have different kinds of paintbrushes, I guess, you know, you could do different things with different kinds of paintbrushes, right?
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's needle.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needle exchange. See you next time.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.